I swear to you, I was never so alive as when I was winning this throne, or so dead as now that I've won it.
Hello and welcome to Two Champs and a Chomp, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast founded in 2010 by Will Lentz, myself, Brett Zeiler, and Greg Atkinson. Major props go out to FFG for putting out a great game, George R. Martin for an amazing product, Card Game DB for our hosting, and Josh Woodward to the Creative Commons licensed music you hear today. Welcome to Season 3.
I'm Kenan, sometimes known as Will Lentz. And who's my usual co-host this week? I lose track.
Is that me?
I think so.
Oh, I'm Brett Zeiler.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
That's who I am.
Do you post on the interwebs at all?
I've actually been in the last couple of days trying to post a little more often, actually.
You know, I thought I had seen you
I posted several times on Card Game DB yesterday. Mostly about how people are wrong.
And you post as who?
On CardGameDB, I'm just Zyler.
Ah.
But on the FFG forums, I am intentionally anonymous.
Yeah, that's okay. They're not that active these days.
Yeah, true.
I can't imagine why. Maybe it's the absurd load times.
Because they're just awful.
Yeah. But, listeners, I think you heard some high-pitched laughter just now from our third co-host, who is not actually a drunken, giggling Daryl, as you might have expected.
It is not. Much to my chagrin.
Yes. Instead, it's our pleasure to welcome Mr. Joshua Staten back to the fold.
I thought it was Stanton.
Stanton. Ah, yeah. Yeah, I always get that mixed up.
You know, at this point, I don't even know. I don't even know how to spell my own name.
That is a really bad sign, I think.
Yeah, maybe I am drunk.
You probably are.
That would explain a lot.
I mean, you're replacing Daryl this episode, so...
Well,
you have some pretty big shoes to live up to.
You have to do your part.
Well, I'll try, guys. I'll try real hard.
Yeah. You're not going to try, are you?
No, not at all. But I feel like that's what Daryl would want.
It is.
Yes. So, yeah, Josh is kind of delving back into the game now after... It's been about a year that you're out, right?
Yeah, I mean, I showed up to Gen Con last year, but I didn't even play my own deck.
I didn't even remember that you did show up to Gen Con, come to think of it.
Yeah, he totally did. I beat him in the round two of the melee.
Oh, okay. Well, fair enough.
That was such... I hated that, because I played... I was like, you know, no one is ever going to use Fear of Winter in melee, because that's stupid.
Really? Wow.
And then
you never played with Greg... He's the first person I saw doing it a bunch, and then Zyler picked up that terrible, terrible habit from him.
Yeah, every round in the melee, I played against Fear of Winter. It was stupid. I just lost.
Yeah, that's abysmal.
Yeah.
Some people, man. Ban the plot. That's not good. But anyway, yeah, for anybody who doesn't know you, thanks to your hiatus and whatnot. You've been playing the game off and on since when? I'm trying to remember. Was it the same year I started or the year after?
No. I've pretty much been playing since the beginning. I got out of Magic, what was it, 2001 when that came out? Because I picked it up,
Thrones,
in October.
2002 was the launch.
Okay. I remember I picked it up, in October, and, it had been shown at Gen Con that year.
Okay, yeah, almost exactly the same time as me then.
Yeah.
So, old hat at this. We'll look forward to getting some feedback from you. I think things have changed an awful lot since you were last paying attention.
Yes, and that was definitely my intention. I figured I would just leave, wait for Martell to get bans, and then come back.
And lo and behold, they pretty much did.
Yep. Yeah.
But we'll learn more about that in a little bit, I think. For the moment, though, I think we've got some pretty exciting news out of FFG headquarters, out of the old Roseville, as they call it.
I don't think they call it that.
They just call it Roseville, don't they?
Probably, yeah. Mm.
They really ought to go with Ye Old Roseville.
Ye Old Roseville?
Yeah, yeah, it has that.
Roseville-y.
So, yeah, we've got a couple announcements here. Let's hit on the somewhat more boring one first. We saw some new League Night kits announced for Season 2 for the LCGs, for all of them. And I've got to say, they're looking pretty sweet. It looks like they changed up the contents a little bit this time around. No box and no power counters, you said, right?
Yeah, no power counters. At least not on the Thrones one, which is the only one that I actually clicked on to look at specifically.
Yeah, I was thinking you said you were kind of bummed about that.
Mm-hmm.
On the plus side, the promo alt art cards this time around, though, are Wildfire Assault and Balin Greyjoy. Wildfire Assault, I think, is both going to be popular. Just, you know, it's a good all-around plot. It'll see some play, already does. And the new art is... pretty sick, I think, from what I can tell, though it looks pretty small.
It seems really good. Way better than the terrible alt Valar Morghulis art.
It was pretty bland, but I'm not going to complain about potentially getting another copy of Valar.
I actually would.
Really?
Yeah.
Man, I never seem to have enough copies of it. But this new art looks sick. I'm trying to see, I think, is this an underwater shot showing, like, sailors, like, drowning as, like, casks of wildfire fall into the water around them? Is that what I'm seeing?
I didn't look at it that closely. I definitely saw the wildfire explosions, that it was full bleed. I was at work when I was looking at it, so.
Yeah, I think you're right, actually. Yeah, it does look like they're underwater.
I mean, that sounds awesome.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's a pretty sweet looking Lanny playmat, so I wouldn't complain about that either. Balin, though, the art doesn't look that exciting, and man, I don't know any version of Balin that I'd be that excited.
Yeah, excited about getting one.
Yeah. You know, I like King Balin well enough, when I play Greyjoy unopposed, but, you know, he doesn't really make any of my builds that aren't unopposed.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, Balin is kind of a weird choice thing. I mean, is it just because, like, they wanted to pick a Greyjoy thing because, like, they're doing the ship stuff, or...?
Possibly.
Who even plays Greyjoy?
No one.
Nobody. There definitely wasn't a deck that just won in Atlanta, and I definitely didn't want play one at the Moon Boy.
Definitely not.
There definitely weren't any high-placing ones at, whatchamacallit.
There weren't any at whatchamacallit.
Yeah. No, sorry, I was trying to think the bigger European tournament, not Stalik, the Spanish one, I think it was.
The Battle for the Wall.
Yeah, it could be the Battle for the Wall.
That's the only big Spanish tournament I know of.
No, I don't believe it was that one because it was before the Moon Boy, because that was where I was looking at for the inspiration for my Maester.
Oh, I don't know then.
Maybe it was Stalik, and I'm just not remembering properly at this point. That's possible. But anyway, so the kit looks pretty sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Looking forward to trying figuring out something to do with that. I think we're going to have to change up our attempt at running leagues here at the store, though. I was talking to Carl about that recently, and I think it may be more reasonable to just try to run one, like, organized tournament during a month and use all of the prizes from the kit for that one tournament.
Yep.
Actually what we do here.
Yeah.
Is we just do the one tournament.
It's what we used to do until the guys at Meta decided to change it up for this most recent league kit and didn't seem to do very well.
Yeah, it sounded like a sweet plan at first, but it just scheduling for everybody, I just don't think it worked out for the players to show up as often as it needed.
Mm-hmm. I mean, especially because I could literally never play in any tournaments.
Yeah, exactly. So hopefully, you know, if it's just one per month, and we kind of schedule that out a little better, hopefully that's something we can plan around for people like you and Joe and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, of course, there's some for the other card games here. They all look pretty cool, though I've got to say the other one that looks most intriguing to me has got to be the Netrunner alt-art cards.
Mm-hmm.
Not as enthused about the playmat, but that alt-art Kate looks pretty sweet.
Yeah, it looks really cool.
And the Scorched Earth looks fantastic from what I can tell. So, any other thoughts, comments, questions, analysis, interpretations on the League kits?
No, it's some cool stuff overall.
Right on. Okay, and then we've got the exciting stuff. Who wants to delve into this? All right.
I don't know if you do it, Will.
Okay, me it is. All right, we've got some more spoilers from the King's Road cycle, which I've got to say, every time we see some more info about the King's Road cycle, I get more and more excited about it.
It looks really cool.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I've really been enjoying the Song of the Sea cycle so far. I think it's added a lot of really cool stuff to the environment. Stuff for Jamie's, stuff for Shaga's, and okay, maybe not as much in the Ned department, but whatever. I just mainly care about Shaga. but still, I just desperately want it to be over and for this one to start because it looks awesome. So the first thing we see is the Fire and Ice chapter pack itself, which appears to have art of Khal Drogo on it,
mm-hmm.
Which some folks may recognize from the gigantic standees that FFG has, like at Gen Con and such.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so that was at Gen Con, and we were bugging Damon about it, and he would just kind of snicker evilly and mention that it was from a card we hadn't seen yet.
So, looks like this cycle.
So, yeah, I mean, and it's kind of crazy to think that means, you know, like, art descriptions, and even, like, finished art, had been done for this cycle Gen Con last year.
Yeah,
like a year delay.
Over a year in advance.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Well, they still do the thing where they get, like, art, and then they just put it, into a slush file, and they don't use it, right? So it could just be that they did it for, you know, promotional reasons and then decided to dig it out because they couldn't find other Khal Drogo art. Because
it looked awesome.
Potentially true.
Yeah. Unfortunately, if the usual pattern holds true, Drogo will not actually be in this chapter pack.
I was going to wonder, why do they do that?
I don't know. That actually drives me up the wall. It seems like a very small an easy improvement to their system for people to be able to get excited about seeing something on the box and then get that something inside the box.
Very simple concept.
Yeah. But oh well, we've got actual cards to go with that, right?
We do.
Now, there are two that are kind of a pair that maybe we'll save till the end. But we've got several others here. I know there's one that we can just barely see that Staten's pretty excited about.
Yes.
What's that one, Josh?
That is Sir Garland Tyrell.
All right. So, unfortunately, we can't tell much about him, can we?
We can see a name.
Pretty much.
We can see that he's only Baratheon. He is not dual house Lainey Baratheon like his previous versions have been.
Yeah, that's kind of a bummer. I've really been hoping to see more of the dual house Tyrells in the game.
Mm-hmm.
They're way cooler.
Agreed. That's have they been just not been doing as much dual house? Or?
Yeah, I really don't think they have been. There were a few in what was the previous cycle?
Oh, the Beyond the Narrow Sea.
Yes.
Yeah.
There were a few there. The kingdoms were six affiliations.
Yes.
Yeah. Right.
But yeah, not a whole lot otherwise.
Yeah, it's a shame.
The new Marjorie Tyrell champ card is, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I started a theme.
Yeah, exactly.
Tyrell champ cards.
Tell you what, if I ever win a championship, I'll try to make a Tyrell card, too.
Good. You're not going to win a championship, will
you? Oh, God, no.
Yeah.
But, boy, do I have some great ideas for after I ever do.
Oh, that's good. Keeps you alive.
Yep, I'd kill to have my name on a card.
It's a pretty good feeling.
Yeah, I bet so.
Hey, you could just be
an artist instead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, the much better chance is you actually learning how to produce art and then somehow getting FFG to use that art.
Yeah.
Good luck. Speaking of art, though, this Ilaria Sand next to Garland, it looks pretty freaking sweet. as far as the art goes.
Mm-hmm. Again, can't see much about the card.
Yeah. We can see she's 3 cost, 3 strength, intrigue, and power icon. And we can basically just see the first letter of each of her lines of text.
I'm guessing that first line is going to be House Martell only.
Right. I was going to say, I think we can see enough to make some educated guesses. That W there is probably while.
Yeah.
Such and such, right? Because especially underneath that, you can see a G and just the corner of another letter, which I'm betting is gains.
Yep.
So while something, I don't know, we've been getting some of these non-agenda cards, that's possible.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a summer-winter themed pack, so maybe it's while it is summer, since the Martells are themed that way, or maybe it's while it's not winter. Past that, can't really tell what the rest of that is. But
yeah, no, not much.
Something. And, of course, we get Slaver's Bay, a Targaryen unique location of some kind.
It's 2 cost.
Yeah. Probably the east, though we can't
probably see. Yeah.
So that's a bummer. But one of you guys throw the location on us that we can read.
That would be the King's Road. It's a 1-cost neutral location with the North trait. And after you win a challenge, kneel all copies of the King's Road in play to choose an opponent. Then, if it is winter, that player must discard 1 card at random from his or her hand. And it has +1 initiative and +1 gold.
Does that location seem above the curve to anybody?
Seems really good. It's really, really good.
Now, that is actually the first time I think that we've seen those two icons grouped together with initiative and gold. It's either influence and gold or initiative influence.
Except Knights of the Hollow Hill.
That card is awful.
And also Burned and Pillage with minuses.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
Touché.
I'd kind of forgotten about the Burned and Pillage. But yeah, it is interesting. I mean, it's solid right off the bat. As a 1-cost +1 gold that's not limited.
Mm-hmm.
The initiative is just kind of a nice little boon. But then you throw in that ability there. I mean,
that's brutal for winter.
Yeah. And it's kind of crazy because the formatting is similar to the way, like, City of Shadows
mm-hmm.
is worded? No, sorry, Kingdom of Shadows is worded. Where all the copies get knelt after winning the challenge so that, you know, they don't get to go off multiple times for each copy. But that one could backfire on you. If I'm reading this right, the King's Road won't backfire on you.
Yeah, but you have to choose an opponent, so
really,
you wouldn't be able to choose yourself even if you wanted to.
Yeah, and it's only after you win it, not after any
player. Yeah, true, yeah.
The challenge. And it's off of any challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Not a specific one, like the Kingdom. Like, wow, that seems like a super powerful effect with no downside. It can't backfire on you. Nothing negative happens. You know, it doesn't get, like, discarded if it's summer mm-hmm. or anything like that.
I think I remember seeing, like, a lot of decks running 3 Kingdom of Shadows just because it's super cost effective and it's not limited. I don't understand why you wouldn't just replace all of those with this card.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't have the house affiliations.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a downside.
It'd be sold by men with no kings.
Right. Now, on the flip side, it's the North rather than a kingdom, so it can't be stolen by Mance Rayder.
True.
So it's kind of a trade-off. Depends on which one you'll see more of.
Do people still play with men with the
Greg does.
Okay. Yeah.
See,
just Greg when he wants to screw me.
Yeah. He doesn't want to buy you dinner first.
Yeah. Man, that card just seems crazy. I don't know. I guess I'll have to wait and see the whole situation. But it seems like that's pushing the power level of stuff pretty hard.
Yeah, seems good.
Well, isn't this whole cycle supposed to be about kind of like supporting existing themes?
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see some more like neutral hate in this cycle too.
Oh, you know, that is actually a strong possibility that I hadn't been thinking much about.
I hadn't either.
Yeah, because assumably one of the packs is probably going to touch on Let's see, which cycle had the reinforcements? That was the very first cycle, wasn't it?
No, it was the season cycle.
Oh,
it'd be in this pack if it was anywhere.
Yeah, exactly. Huh. That is an interesting thought. Well, let's jump into the really big ones here. The elephants in the room, so to speak. Josh, you want to lay one of those on us?
Yeah, so we have A Song of Fire. It's an agenda. It has the seasons traits. If no opponent is running a seasons agenda, it cannot be winter. If it is summer, increase each player's draw cap by one.
Yeah, what the heck. Throw the second one on us. Talk about them both in context.
And then we have Song of Ice, again, an agenda with the season's trait. If no opponent is running a season's agenda, it cannot be summer. If it is winter, each player must choose and discard down to four cards in hand at the end of the dominance phase.
I just kind of want to say wow at both mm-hmm. of these right off the bat. Not only is the art
art's really cool,
but the effect is rather interesting for both of them. I mean, they effectively trump the Kings of agendas.
Oh, yeah.
I'd like to point out that the Song of Ice is really just a reprint of, what was it, Threat from the East agenda?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Almost.
Even
it
I
just
know
has
that.
To be winter now.
Yeah.
And Threat from the East was a pretty popular option for a while there.
In fact, it got nerfed pretty hard, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this is going to be interesting. It really changed the way people had to play their games whenever they were up against it. And it kind of changed how you had to play your own deck and obviously build it. So I think there's a good chance that A Song of Ice is going to be awfully popular, mm-hmm. especially when you have that King's Road up there to back it up.
Yeah, to just force through more discard. Although if you do it, you could eventually have your agenda doing nothing if you do use it to discard a card to put some adder below four.
Right.
Right, right. Yeah, it is certainly possible that you just empty out the opponent's hand and then yours doesn't do much after that. But as popular as draw has been in the past, I think most folks are still going to want to be having the effects to be able to fill their hand back up. So, mm-hmm. I don't know. Either I think they're going to build back up and your agenda's going to come into play again, or you're just going to have them down to top decking, in which case that's actually quite good for you as well.
Mm-hmm.
The flip side of the kind of situation, or the other implications, I guess, being that I think Song of Ice is going to be popular, and since it trumps anything except A Song of Fire, summer is going to be pretty much non-existent, I think.
Probably pretty unpopular. Outside of specifically playing A Song of Fire.
Right. It's not going to work with the agenda. I mean, you're giving up a restricted slot, and you're just going to get shut down hard by Song of Ice.
Mm-hmm. Although, hopefully, I mean, it may be enough to lead to an unrestriction of those agendas.
You know, I think that would be a good move at the time these come out. I think that would... I still don't know if I would pick either of them, but that might ease up on things enough that folks are willing to take the gamble.
Yeah, I actually feel like also, again, I know summer has been kind of the weaker of the two seasons, and it's no different with these, because the summer agenda doesn't even give you card advantage. It gives you the potential for card advantage.
Actually, I think it's probably substantially weaker than Song of Ice.
It definitely is. I mean, Lannister and then Val Laughing Storm are probably the only things, the only decks that'll be able to really take advantage of it.
Now, it will be pretty rad with Val Laughing Storm.
Oh, yeah.
And Baratheon definitely has several summer effects that'll enjoy mm-hmm. that deck.
Yeah.
So that's pretty sweet. I can't help but wonder, since we've got that King's Road up there that's very winter-themed and, you know, has also a discard that kind of goes along with the flavor there of Song of Ice, I can't help but wonder if we'll see some kind of similar card for Summer with Song of Fire.
It wouldn't shock me.
You know, win a challenge, kneel all copies, and draw a card.
Yeah.
I don't know. To really balance out, though, since Song of Fire just ups your draw cap, it probably ought to be kneel all the copies and draw one card for each copy.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, that seems really ridiculous.
Oh yeah, it would be. It's just, you gotta really put a lot of work into it for that draw cap increase to pay off, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's true.
Especially when you're giving up an agenda that could be providing cards.
Yeah.
Also, I just noticed that the King's Road, you discard the card at random, too.
Yep.
That's pretty...
It's essentially an extra intrigue plane.
Right.
And will any power behind the throne winter?
Yeah.
Oh, good lord. I actually feel like that agenda, Song of Ice, is actually really good for Baratheon right now. With all their super recursion, like, that card's going to be ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, Laughing Storm. Like,
yeah, Laughing Storm will protect you from it whenever you don't want to have to worry about it.
Yeah, that's true.
But, dude, yeah, Will, you can build your army recursion deck and just ditch your hand to Song of Ice.
Yeah, exactly.
And then have someone else play that deck better than you.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is usually the case. Except for the time that Greg and I both took the army recursion back up to the first Days of Ice and Fire. I definitely did better than Greg that particular tournament, and in fact beat him in the mirror match.
Oh, wow.
So that was
actually one of the few tournaments I just completely smashed Greg in. That was a good tournament.
Yeah. He was didn't seem to be running on all cylinders. I chalk it up to running that deck with Knights of Hollow Hill. I don't think that was quite the right call.
Yeah, that was back when he was still trying to kind of make that agenda happen.
Yeah.
Everyone was like, it's not happening, Greg.
Yeah, and then it rolled around to Gen Con, and suddenly it happened.
Right, but it wasn't because of that. It wasn't him at all.
Yeah, it was the reinforcement events.
Right.
That he was playing.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't. No, it was. It was just a coincidence.
Well, do we have anything else to wrap up these agendas here? Other thoughts and commentary?
I mean, I think they're really cool. Both of them. I mean, Song of Ice is absolutely going to see more play than Song of Fire, but I'm sure there are some dedicated decks. I mean, like I said, like most Lannister decks, if you're packing Golden Tooth Mines and Tomans and stuff. It wouldn't be hard to hit the draw cap, and then I'm sure there's going to be a Barra, Val, Laughing Storm deck to take advantage of that.
Mm. I mean, do you think it'll be, like, Song of Ice will be so prevalent that a Song of Fire will essentially be a defensive pick?
It could happen. I don't really see it happening, honestly. I mean, Song of Ice is good, but I'm not sure. I didn't play back in the CCG days when Threat from the East was played, so I'm not sure exactly how popular it could end up being, but... I don't know. Yeah. I don't see it being an enormously popular choice outside of maybe like Greyjoy and Stark.
It'll be a pain for sure, but it is something that you can adjust to and play under those restrictions for the game.
Yeah, like the first time it'll suck when you're discarding four or five cards, and then at that point you have your four cards, you draw two a turn, you can probably get away with playing at least two cards a turn. So after you hit that first time, I don't see it really hurting you much in the future.
Yeah. Unless they're just choking the hell out of you.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
In which case, it'll probably be quite good.
Yeah, Greyjoy Choke's going to love this. Absolutely.
Okay. Well, let's move on then, and let's take a look at some different agendas and things.
There was one last card spoiled there, Will.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I did not scroll down far enough. Well, you want to save me and read that sucker?
I'll go ahead and do that. It's a neutral event card. I guess it's just an event card. It's not necessarily neutral specifically, but whatever. Green Dream. It's a dominance. If you are running a season's agenda, search your deck for a non-Raven card with either the word summer or winter in its text box. Reveal it and add it to your hand. Then shuffle your deck. So basically you have a tutor for Wintertime Marauders.
Yeah.
Oh,
or anything you want, basically, you know.
Of the seasonal stuff.
Field of Fire, just to make your opponent, you know, terrified of making challenges at you, since you have to reveal it.
Yeah.
Or you need to go grab Open Market or something.
Mm-hmm.
Grab the crowns, too.
Mm-hmm. Crowns, yeah.
And, you know, the crowns make me wonder, looking at this, because it's obvious they're kind of... You know, pushing and pulling with how the seasons work for us. Do you think there's going to be some different seasonal card, like season generating cards available, aside from the Ravens?
I'd hope so.
They coming in this pack?
It wouldn't surprise me.
I'll probably one of each from another main character or main character or attachment. Probably the only two options. I guess it could be a location, but
yeah.
I don't know. They've always been characters and attachments before now.
Well, I mean, there used to be, back in Westeros Flock, there was like a White Raven character for Baratheon, so I mean, you could just have a White Raven and Black Raven character.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, that is sure possible. It's going to be pretty awesome, I think. It's kind of awkward that it's in Dominance, though, so that makes things kind of tough for you if you're up against Song of Ice, you know?
I mean, unless you have the four cards and you use this and it just replaces itself.
Right, right. I was more thinking if you are the summer deck trying to recover.
Yeah.
I mean, you're still going to be able to go get something, potentially a crown, for instance.
Yeah.
You know, if that would help you. Depends on what the opponent's using. If they're using a crown or something, sure, go ahead and make it both seasons at once and things might be all right for you, but...
Mm-hmm. Also, the art's really cool.
Yeah.
That is really cool, yeah.
And it's, I mean, just... Tutors are good.
Yeah. That one's free, and there's no cost.
Mm-hmm. Nope. You can even use it to search up a raven.
Good. Actually, it says for a non-raven
card. Oh, it does say non-raven card. You're right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if not reading things.
Specifically tells you you can't do
that.
Also, you could actually just search for another copy of Green Dreams.
You could indeed. If you really just desperately need to thin your deck by three cards. And I do know how you love cards that do that, Josh.
Yes, I always like that. I mean, then you'd at least get all of them in your discard pile. And then you can get them out again if you need to.
Yeah. Yeah, somehow.
I'm sure there are ways to get events back. I didn't see any recently, but I'm sure they're out there.
Prince's Plans or
Fire
and such. I don't Pyre of the False Gods.
Yeah.
I don't know what you're gonna do with that, but you could.
You know, stuff.
In fact, actually, if you just have two of them and an altar in play, you can loop that forever.
Yep.
Now I just need FFG to create the card where I claim one power each time I shuffle my deck.
Or play an event.
Yeah, exactly. Something could be had here. We need to make this happen.
Maybe Garland will say you can stand him every time an event is played.
There you go.
All right. Next up, we have some chatter about... this regional season, the stats from tournaments specifically. I know last year we went over it pretty much every single episode with new info, but this year I think we're gonna try to make it a bit more sporadic to get more other content inside the other episodes. So every couple episodes we're gonna go over regionals and such. So we're doing that today.
Yeah, and we're kind of splitting up some of the commentary. Last week Greg and I kind of talked about the big picture stuff. What has turned up in general to all the regionals, but it took a little bit of time before the episode to compile what we've seen in the top X appearances at regionals so far. So we can take it down another layer here and look at what we're seeing in the top placement.
Yep.
Of course, one thing that is worth noting for listeners, I mentioned that it's top X, which is important to note because we have tournaments ranging all the way from top 16 down to top 4. And while that does skew things a little bit when I use the tournament cuts like that, rather than standardizing the stats that I'm looking at, I would have to go down to top 4 for all of the tournaments, which cuts the sample size significantly.
Yeah, it makes it way smaller.
Right. And, you know, some of these tournaments, obviously, if you're cutting to a top 16, you're having a much bigger turnout. So I still think it gives us an interesting picture to go ahead and look at the stats by where each tournament had their own cut.
I agree.
I concur.
But I also hooked the guys up with the file that Greg and I were looking at last week with the general stats. so we could kind of compare and contrast how things are looking. So last week we saw that Stark was on top, and I think I'm not terribly surprised to see which house came out on top when we actually look at placements.
Yep.
This is the house I think we were all saying should be on top going into regionals. And that is Targaryen.
That it is.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Now, Stark drops down to second place.
It is still doing well.
Yeah, and the two of them trade off. But there's not a huge gap between them. Granted, they're all considerably closer together here.
There's a bigger gap between those two than any other house in the ladder, so...
Yeah, fair enough. 22 Targaryen and 16 Starks out of what we had available for us. Or, sorry, 17.
17, yeah.
so, actually, the gap is about the same size, come to look at it, as it was in the whole field. Though in the whole field, it played to Stark's favor. Mm-hmm. That's interesting, because the, 5-6 decks... It has a much bigger impact, I suppose, when you cut the pool down so much smaller. Third, we come up with Greyjoy. Fourth, Lannister. Baratheon, and then Martell at the very bottom down here. Only 10 top.
Oh, how the tides have turned.
Yeah. Wow. I don't think it surprises us too much after that FAQ, though, right?
No, not really. And I'm sure a part of it is probably just that so many people are disillusioned with Martell because they haven't gotten many new power cards out of the new set. So I personally feel like Martell is still plenty powerful, even with their restrictions and such. But I just feel like people are disillusioned with them more than anything else.
Yeah.
I think what you're seeing here is where... Like, the overall stance, what you're seeing is somewhat house popularity. And when you get to the top, you start seeing what do competitive players rank mm-hmm. these houses. This is how the competitive players see these houses. You, Greg, Mathlete, Benton, everyone there knows that Martell is not, or at least perceives that Martell is not as good anymore. So they're not playing it. They're playing Targaryen because that seems to be the general feel for what's on top.
Yeah.
And those players are going to make top 8 regardless of what house they're playing.
Yeah, as we saw when Bruno won with Baratheon.
Right.
and I think you're right, seeing Stark, of course, at the top in just general turnout. I think generally that doesn't surprise us. I think last year it was pretty much always at the top, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
It's just the house people like. But I am a little surprised to see it in second place for placement, because I really was thinking Greyjoy was still looking awfully strong and barely got touched by the FAQ. I mean, sure, it's in third and only by three deck difference. But I really kind of thought that it was going to turn out to be second place.
From what I remember, though, Stark is just, don't get me wrong, Greyjoy has always been pretty strong, but Stark is much more consistent. Greyjoy,
and there are also a lot more competitive Stark decks you can play.
Right.
Yeah, sure. That's actually probably a good point. You can definitely go with some kind of Siege Rush. I've been seeing some Toolbox Black Sails experimented with down here. And, of course, people have been trying House of Dreams and Maesters.
And Stark No Agenda is even a fine deck,
mm-hmm.
powered by, Mage Mormont and such.
Mm-hmm.
And who doesn't love using Mirror Reed, the best card in the game?
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, I guess Greyjoy does not have a mirror read.
They do not,
unfortunately. Well, any other thoughts on what we're seeing for the house turnout?
No, it's honestly about what I'd expect. Okay. I'm not terribly shocked by any of it. Baron and Martell at the bottom, Targaryen, Stark at the top, and Greyjoy landing in the middle is how I would have put it if I had to decide to guesstimate.
Yeah, Though it is interesting to see that Baratheon is popping up more and more as regional season is going on. When I'm scrolling across here, you know, like you see one turned up at the Spanish Battle for the Wall, and then there weren't any for several regionals.
Yeah.
And then more of them suddenly start popping up here, you know, just a couple here and there. But I think you can kind of tell when word spread about Mathlete's win.
Yep.
And it started influencing people.
Like there were three at one regional, three Barriss.
Yeah.
Huddersfield or something.
Yeah, that was UK regional, I believe.
Yeah, sounds. Yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of crazy. They only had a top four. It was three Baratheon and a Lannister.
Yeah.
That poor Lannister.
I know, right?
I think it'd also be interesting, and I hadn't even thought about this, but breaking it down by like region. Because is there still a large discrepancy between European and North American metas?
You know,
I feel like it's been lessened a lot more recently, but probably still a bit.
I would agree with that. I mean, Octagon is getting better and better these days, and more people are using it and the Skype group and playing kind of cross-continent.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, places like Card Game DB and whatnot. I mean, half the writers, if I remember right, are not in the States right now. So I think people are getting a lot better view of what's going on worldwide these days.
Because I remember even, you know, just... last regional season, there was still just like tons and tons of just Stark everywhere in Europe. But here, it doesn't appear to be the case. There's a lot less Stark than there traditionally have been.
Yeah. I think things have definitely been changing there. The world is growing smaller, as they say.
Oh. Interesting.
Yeah.
What about the, I know there was a big, like, Chinese group. Have we heard much out of them?
I have to admit, I have not heard anything out of China. I'm going off of stats that folks have emailed into the show, or that have reported them to the 2013 tournament's results thread in the Card Game DB forums.
Mm-hmm.
So unfortunately I have not seen anything out of China, though I'm betting they probably either have already had a regional or national event or will be very soon.
Yeah, almost definitely. I know they had a ton of players at a tournament. I don't remember last time I saw it was like 6 or 7 months ago. They had a huge tournament. But I do know their card pool, I believe, is fairly limited compared to the rest of the world's.
Right.
I don't think they have the full card pool yet. I think they just have core sets and deluxe expansions. I don't even know if they have any, chapter packs.
No, I think that actually they've been catching up. I think at this point they're just missing the first two.
Oh, really? Okay.
Oh, yeah. Well, along with half of the English players.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay. Well, you guys ready to move on to agenda then?
I'm ready.
Okay. Sure. So we see the agendas, I think, shuffle around quite a bit from looking at the entire field down to the top portion. And I think this one may surprise some folks, or it may not. We see the top placement agenda pop up to be House of Dreams.
Yeah.
Now, it was the most popular actual agenda in the field at large.
After no agenda.
Right. And many of those no agendas, of course, are character agendas and stuff, but it's just too hard to track that. So it stays on the top of the actual agendas. And I don't know. It seems surprising to me. You know, of course, when House of Dreams came out, we were looking at it and we're like, you know, this doesn't quite seem like all the numbers and the effect lines up as balanced as we would expect, you know, and then people were playing with it and were unhappy with how it actually played. And then, of course, you know, the epic battle came out that hampers it some, and City Besieged hampers it some. And then here it is, still the most frequent placing agenda. I'm not going to say best placing because I haven't yet tabulated all of the winning
placings.
But it is definitely the most placing agenda.
Yep.
And you also see it, though, like, second half of the regional season just virtually disappear. It was pretty much only in the first half.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm not really sure what happened with that, because the first pack's been out long enough now, and that's the one that had the new epic battle in it. So I'm not really sure what's pushed that drop-off.
Yeah, I actually had noticed that. I can't think of a real good reason for that, honestly.
Maybe people just got bored with it.
Maybe.
It's possible. You know, or maybe other agendas are growing more popular. You know, I'm also surprised, but not surprised, about the number two agenda. Sorry, two and three, they are tied. It just happened by alphabetical order to put this one first, that I am both surprised and not surprised about. And that's going to be the Maester's Path.
I'm totally not surprised.
It's only behind by a couple. I guess I'm not surprised from how I was looking at things before regionals started. I think I said this on the show. I know I at least said it just talking. And I was like, man, I still think Maesters are crazy strong. I was just like, I swear to God, if they dominate regional season again this year, I'm going to start demanding that the damn agenda just be banned. And then, you know, I started getting all these reports from tournaments, and it didn't seem like they were winning. And I started going through and tabulating these placements tonight. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, there's only like one here and two at this tournament and whatever. But by the time I sort them all out by total numbers, it's right there tied for second place.
Out of all the regionals we have here, only five didn't have at least the Maesters and their top X cut.
Yeah, and it's only two behind House of Dreams. House of Dreams had 16, Maesters and the other one tied there both had 14. Mm-hmm. So I guess, you know, I'm just surprised that the total did wind up that way, though it's kind of edging towards proving my initial thoughts about regional season correct. Well,
here's something. How do you know offhand how many of these Maesters paths actually won the tournaments?
I do not know how many actually won the tournament off the top of my head. Like I said, I wasn't going through and adding that up.
Because I know there's been at least a couple.
I wouldn't be surprised if, again, it's just these top players still seeing the potential there mm-hmm. and playing the agenda, then getting to the top eight, where now you're assuming the skill level's a lot closer than in Swiss. And they're losing just because the decks don't match up as well. Because I think against other agendas like the Long Voyage, House of Dreams, like Maesters, it just isn't there anymore. Like, it just doesn't have the utility that it used to.
I mean, it is missing, of course, a little bit of its power level, but I'm not willing to write it off yet.
I don't think so either, but I think it's at a point where you can't just... You know, I can't teach someone how to play this week, have them go to a tournament next week with the Maesters agenda and make top eight.
Oh, no. That's like, what the Long Voyage is for.
Exactly. You draw dudes, you play dudes, you win games.
Yeah, that's exactly. All that is the Long Voyage agenda. And in case anybody hadn't picked it up, the Long Voyage is tied for number two, also with 14 appearances.
Yep.
Also, if you look... The House of Dreams and Long Voyage swap places. There's almost no
people start moving across.
Yeah.
I know at least for the Spanish battle for the Wall event, I don't think the Long Voyage was actually printed.
It may not have been. It was in the second chapter pack, so it may not have been available. And you know, that's one looking at it tied for second place in placement out of the entire field. Stats, it was, you know, in the upper middle range out of the agenda rankings, but didn't really have that many people playing it. It had a third as many people roughly playing it as playing no agenda, here in quotes, of course, and only about half as many people playing it as playing House of Dreams, right? So comparatively not nearly as much. But then you jump over to placement, and it is right there neck and neck for the top honors.
Yeah, and I know that Long Voyage has won several regionals, at least three that I can think of just immediately off the top of my head.
And that's four now that I think about it. You see those top players being the early adopters of the strongest deck. You don't see it in the numbers for overall because the general player base hadn't caught on to it yet. Mm-hmm. You only had like the top players really playing that agenda.
Maybe you do. You know, after looking at various discussions and listening to a lot of people, I think there's a vibe from a lot of players that the Long Voyage feels kind of no talent, as they might say. Mm-hmm. You just make a good stuff dot deck.
Yeah, put 85 good cards in a deck. Go.
Yeah, and with no need to push towards particular themes or anything. You just try to build with, you know, cards that you'll just never be completely unhappy to see, and you just browbeat people.
I don't understand, because I was seeing some of that, and I don't understand. So are you telling me that when you build a 60 card deck, you don't just put in 60 good cards?
I mean, that's my game plan, Norman. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I mean, it's not like, oh, you know, you're just putting in 85 good cards. Well, you're doing the same thing in a 60 card deck too. You're putting in 60 good cards. So I'm not really buying it with the Long Voyage. The Long Voyage doesn't just give you the game. Like, you still have to play the deck.
Oh, yeah, totally. And you are definitely more susceptible to the vagaries of chance.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
Yeah. Brett, I think you said you'd been test playing a Barrow Long Voyage build, right?
Yeah, I've played two games with it.
Oh, just 'cause
that's all the time I've had to actually play with it. But I've probably drawn 30 or 40 sample hands playing through marshalling in round one.
And from what I gathered you were saying the other day, you were just getting kind of wild results, right?
Yeah. Mostly leaning towards bad, honestly.
Yeah. So, you know, it's tough. Obviously, it's working out for people, but it feels like a good portion of that is possibly luck.
Well, I think what it is it's forcing people to look more at, you know, like when you're actually building the deck. Like, you can't just, like, oh, this fits the theme, like, this guy's in the deck. You gotta, like, look at, like, your ratios. Be like, okay, I really need to look at, like, how many locations I have in here. Because I am not getting to turn two and just hit, like, a huge location, like, clump.
Oh,
yeah. Like, I have to look at, you know, actually look at those hard ratios of characters to events, to attachments, to locations.
I would agree. And you definitely got to watch out for, you know, things like setup and whatnot. That mm-hmm. that bigger deck can lead to higher stratification of your cards, which means, you know, there's a chance that you're just going to get boned on a draw, even though you're drawing more cards in general.
But, right.
So what do we have up after the Long Voyage here? Knights of the Hollow Hill, it looks like. With a pretty substantial drop-off.
Yeah. Like, but for individual placings, it's the biggest one.
Yeah, drops off from 14 down to 9, which seems kind of crazy because Knights of the Hollow Hill is in third place in total turnout.
Mm-hmm.
Now, granted, still, there's only about half as many people playing Knights of the Hollow Hill in total turnout as No Agenda, but that just means an even smaller portion of them is making it into the top cut.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe the various changes in the meta, you know, the restrictions and the like, have started pushing that back down, because it's a very control-oriented agenda, and it seems like aggro is king at the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. No other particular thoughts on Knights of the Hollow Hill, then?
Not really. I'm a little shocked that it's where it is. So I might have to be a little higher, but I don't know.
I would reckon that it's just people who didn't really adjust to the fact, and like their deck was still like decent, but you know, they just took out some restricted stuff, put some other stuff in, probably didn't play test it very well, probably solid players though with a solid deck, and you know, they made top 8. I doubt any of them won.
Yeah, that's probably a good choice.
I could see that.
Thought. Though I do know at least one Knights of the Hollow Hill build won. Libertine over in Australia did win with Martell Knights of the Hollow Hill.
That's impressive, then.
Yeah.
Touché.
Mm-hmm. You know what seems interesting to me? No Agenda up next with 8 appearances. Now, from what I gathered, several of the top X breakdowns on the site did mention which character agenda they had, mm-hmm. but not all of them, so I didn't want to break part of it out and not the whole thing. But it seemed like the majority of those were
character agendas.
Yeah, were character agendas. Quentin and I believe Kindly Man was what I was seeing. I'm honestly kind of surprised to see no agenda, as it were, creeping up into the top appearances fairly high like this.
I feel like that. I haven't really looked at the deck since that fact, but just that Martell character agenda, like, using like Archibald and whatever.
Drinkwater,
yeah. Like, they just have solid, awesome characters. So just running that character agenda with like those dudes and just having like a stronger character base seems like a decent deck.
Yeah.
It's definitely possible. And then, I mean, Stark Kindly Man decks have always been kind of on the periphery of powerful. So, I mean, if a good player ends up playing it, they'll probably do well with it. And, I mean, I'm still impressed by how decent, at least in my opinion, Stark No Agenda is. Again, powered by, like, Mage with Damon Dance for me and the new Riders of Carhold.
Oh, I do really love the new Riders. Well, what else do we have after that? We have Black Sails. Doesn't surprise me too much where it is there.
Yeah, it's new, so people are obviously going to be playing that. I'm not terribly impressed by the deck, honestly. Or any of the decks, I guess I should say, because any house could play it, except Martell, really.
Yeah. And, of course, Black Sails had 6 appearances. The next couple have 5. And then we have a pretty heavy drop-off down below that to 3s and 2s and a single 1 below that. Mm-hmm. But below Black Sails, we have Power Behind the Throne, which I thought was kind of interesting because it really surprised me by being the 3rd most popular actual agenda in just the general population.
Mm-hmm.
I did not expect it to be that popular. Unfortunately, it does not seem to have translated into success in the same way.
Yeah, it's less than half of the total of the Lannister players played Power Behind the Throne.
Mm-hmm.
Almost a third of them. Or playing in the top XX, I guess I should specify.
Right. And then the same number playing Knights of the Realm.
Mm-hmm.
Which, Knights of the Realm looks like it's remaining about where we expected it to be last year, right? In the middle-ish range, maybe the upper middle, because it is a card advantage agenda.
Yeah.
But the mirror match is bad.
And plus, I mean, for most houses, Long Voyage is just kind of a swap-in.
Right. Yeah, so that's almost certainly stealing most of the Knights of the Realm thunder. Siege does less well than I expected, right there behind Knights of the Realm, though.
Yeah, I'm a little shocked by that, I'll admit. I still think Siege is a pretty good deck with the Epic Battle Rush.
Mm-hmm.
Although there are a couple just ways to shut it down in the early game, so that might be part of its issue.
Yeah.
How much of this do you guys feel like it's just the top competitive players just aren't playing these agendas?
That's honestly probably a pretty big part of it. That's been your shtick this episode, so I wasn't going to mention it.
Yeah. Though, I mean, assumably the competitive players are playing the strongest agendas, right? So it kind of naturally means these would shake out lower. You know, both on the player side and the actual power level side, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I would like the perceived power level of these agendas.
Fair enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I mean, sieges. I mean, it's just on the outside. It at least appears to be a very straightforward deck. And like I said, there are several just ways that any deck can just pack a plot or two to counter Stark Siege if they see it and against their opponents. So. That probably hurts it a fair amount. Whether people are actually playing those plots or not is debatable, but the fact that there are just a couple ways to just screw the deck immediately.
Yeah. I think that's the thing, because some of these agendas are good, like Siege is good, but it's not as consistent. And that's always been like a really big thing with competitive players like Mathlete and you know, Greg. Well, no, not Greg as much. But no. Like they want those consistent decks. You know, that they can guarantee are going to, you know, do their thing every game. Whereas Siege, like Zyler said, you like run into like that one matchup and it's not
your opponent just plays Shadows and Spiders turn one and
right. I mean, it's not like, oh, this is going to be a hard game. It's like, well, I just lost this game.
Mm-hmm. So let's see, how do we kind of round things out after that? We got Brotherhood kind of with a smidgen of appearance, not that surprising. A couple Wildlings, Treaty with the Isles.
Appearances.
Yeah, the fact that there's even two is interesting to me. I didn't really expect any of the treaty agendas to make top appearances. And then a single Knights of Winter.
Kings of Winter.
Sorry, Kings of Winter. Too many abbreviations in my sheet here. But yeah, so Kings of Winter's been hammered by
after being
restriction.
Yeah, arguably one of the best decks in the format after Worlds of last year. Just smacked down pretty hard.
Yeah, though, you know, really looking at things, Treaty with the Isles has one of the best percentages of total players to placement here. I mean, there were only three people total that played it, and two of them made top placements.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's two-thirds of the players of that particular agenda. I'm not sure anybody else did quite that good. Actually, you know, looking at things, Maesters, a little over half made it, so.
It's the next best, but.
But anyway, so yeah, interesting. Very interesting. And of course, that's the last one of the agendas that we see in top play. So there are a lot of agendas that don't even make it up there.
No.
And then we would have restricted cards, like we usually talk about. But unfortunately, there were only a couple regionals that had info broken down for who in the top eight had which restricted card. And it just didn't seem very practical to me for us to really only talk about the stats from two tournaments.
Yeah, it's not particularly relevant.
Yeah. So, you know, maybe by the end of regional season, if we've got, say, half a dozen of them that have reported that, then that's probably enough for us to go ahead and take a look at. That's sure stuff that I would be very interested about. So if you have that info and you haven't reported it, make sure you do email us over at 2champs1chump@gmail.com or go post it on CardGameDB so we can get to the info.
True story.
Right on.
Sweet deal. I'm actually kind of surprised, by the way, that Brotherhood didn't do better. I feel like they're pretty strong after the FAQ.
Yeah. You know, speaking of the FAQ, you're a returning player here, Josh. After about a year's realistic hiatus from the game.
Right.
So, you know, things have changed an awful lot since you were last with us.
Just a tad.
Yeah. So I thought it might be interesting for folks listening to the show to kind of get insight into how shocking or interesting that may be. And let's take a look at some of the stuff that has really caught your eye as you started to delve back in. We talked about it briefly earlier, so I think we're gonna break down some of the like the FAQ and restricted list changes. And then some of the top new cards that have you excited, right?
Yeah, I think so. I looked at the... I figured we'll start with the fact first.
Sure.
It's the big change.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that it was a little different, you know. I think the biggest thing was just the number of stuff on there. Because I know there was talk even, you know, back when I was, you know, paying attention, that like, man, this restricted list is getting kind of ridiculous with, like, the number of stuff on there. And then they essentially just double it with one FAQ. That was surprising, but I kind of felt there's nothing on the restricted list, with the exception of one, that I would say doesn't need to be on there. Everything that I saw added to the restricted list, I was like, yeah, that's probably fair enough.
Okay, color me curious. What's the one you think should not be on there?
The refugees, that just seems silly. I get what they're trying to do, right? Like I get it, and I just disagree.
So you actually mean the seven that are on there?
Yeah, right, exactly. I get that, like, they're trying to use the restricted list to not just filter out overpowered cards, but filter out no-brainer cards, which I don't think the restricted list should be used for in the first place. I don't think that's how you don't look at, like, cards, you're like, man, that, you know, we kind of made that a little bit too, you know, ambiguous. Like, we should probably, like, design something else that, like, is maybe not as, you know, that takes some thought to use, but would fill that same sort of niche that card does. Like, that's how you go about fixing that. You don't just say, oh, well, whoops, throw it on the restricted list and pretty much soft ban a card. Like, that's dumb.
So you prefer a hard ban and then for them to print new cards that fill a similar role?
Not even a hard ban, just, like, print other cards that fill the same role but require more thought.
So would you say, like, the new season's agendas?
Yeah, exactly. Like, that is a great example.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Like, you know, they realized that those agendas were a little bit too ambiguous, especially, I think, out of Baratheon, like, that summer agenda. There was no reason that I'm a little bit rusty, but looking at what I saw before, like, the long voyage, there was no reason not to just put the summer agenda onto a Baratheon deck that wasn't running an agenda already. So, you know, come up with, like, a different agenda to take its place. Don't just soft ban a card by putting it on the restricted list when you know it's not good enough to actually be picked as a restricted card.
Yeah. You know, it sounds like you have some similar initial reactions to what, say, Brett and I had.
Yep.
But I do have to say, after I kind of cooled down from the shock of seeing this list and have had more time in the environment, I do really enjoy the environment at the moment.
No, I agree. I think the environment is a much, much better place after this fact. And like I said, I agree with everything except for the refugees. So shall we move on to new cards that I am attaching far too much good to?
Yeah, I think we should definitely do that, and then Brett and I can shoot you down hard.
I'd enjoy that.
I am the one card that, because I looked through the four, there are more chapter packs that I kind of didn't play with out of the Beyond the Narrow Sea, but for the most part, I at least know those cards. But I would, like, had not seen any of this, like, naval stuff at all, which I still think is silly, but whatever.
So you're not digging the naval enhancement?
Nah, I just find it, like, contrary and, like, over complex for no reason. I don't know. Maybe it'll be different in play. I haven't played with it, but it seems silly.
It's been all right when I've been playing with it so far. I'll admit, you know, once or twice I've forgotten, you know, that, like, Greg could jump someone in a challenge and win anyway and whatnot, but, you know, it's been fine when I've been playing with it.
Yeah. How often does it just make the challenges phase longer than it needs to be?
Well, there is that. It does add a little bit on the analysis side. I don't think we've quite hit paralysis yet. but yeah, it definitely does complicate things.
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, maybe games overall are faster now because, like you guys are saying, aggro seems to be doing better.
On the rise.
Yeah, so maybe game length is shorter than it used to be, but I remember a lot of my games going, you know, when I wasn't playing Bear Rush, a lot of my games going close to time, actually. Have you guys seen anything with that where, like, man, if I wasn't, like, you know, messing around with all this stupid, like, how much strength can he jump in, how much strength can I jump in, like, I wouldn't have gone to time or anything?
You know, I haven't really. I did. The only other regional I've made it to so far has been Tulsa's, and I didn't really see anything like that there. But I can't speak to the other regionals at the moment. I haven't really.
I didn't go to the Tulsa regional, so I don't have any competitive testing or games under my belt for this regional season. And aside from our regional, I probably won't. But I just don't see it being. And just the way I look at the board, I don't have an issue looking at it as, oh, that's a potential strength buff. And part of that might just be that I've always been pretty good at knowing what cards do, so just at a glance, I know that it has enable enhancement on there. For that's the same reason that I'm very rarely caught, like, unawares by deadly. It doesn't happen very often to me.
What about in melee? Does it bog things down in melee too? Because you can jump in on a challenge that you don't have a horse in the race, essentially, right? Like, you can jump into someone else's challenge?
You can. No? I have not really had the chance to play Melee since they've been added. I think I played a couple games in Tulsa just for funsies, but it wasn't... I don't think anybody was actually running... whatchamacallit? Naval stuff.
Yeah, and I'm largely uninterested in Melee. If there's a tournament going on, I'll probably play in it. But if it's anything like Worlds last year, if my choice is between a Thrones Melee tournament or a Netrunner or a Star Wars tournament, I'm going to play a Netrunner or a Star Wars.
Fair enough. And so Melee still sucks. Glad to know.
Hey, I still have a blast with it, but depends on what you're doing, I suppose.
Well, I think this is just another thing of where... I can't take Melee seriously. Like, if I do, I just get frustrated. Like, Melee is a great, like, you know, let's get drunk and play Thrones, but I don't know. I still don't think it's a very good competitive format. But anyway, going back to, like, cards that I like.
Yeah.
Longship Golden Storm. That card, like, just seems amazing. Like, is it
really?
That has to be my favorite card that I've seen.
Are you serious?
Yes, because I love, like, the holy theme, right? Mm-hmm. But the problem was always, like, when you aren't on a Power of Faith turn, like, you're kind of getting boned because you just don't have an icon. So, like, you'd be awesome during Power of Faith turns, but then if the game went past that... then you're just hosed. Like, you're like, well, I'm just done with military now. I can't do it. Or you would play, like, Baratheon Shadows with the Shadow Enchantress. But then, like, it was... all the Shadows cards were, like, screwing up, like, the gold curve of the deck, and it wasn't working very well. But with this, I just put, you know, one location out, and bam. It doesn't matter if I'm running Power of Faith that turn or not. Like, all my dudes are essentially tricons. Like, that seems like the last piece that holy decks need. Maybe I'm wrong.
The only way to consistently get it is to use it for your House of Dreams location, and then at that point, you're playing it out of Greyjoy then, and all of your dudes are all three costs or more, so it's messing up your setups if you're running all those guys.
I think that you could... you could get it often enough. If you're running Baratheon Treaty to the Isles, and you're running three of them, and I think you could reasonably get it by turn three. Because you're assuming that if you don't have it, then maybe you'll just run Power of Faith turn one and two. I think it's reasonable to assume that you would get it turn three.
You know, I have to admit at least that much makes sense. But I still think you're putting too much weight on that location.
I mean, probably.
Maybe it's better out of Baratheon compared to Greyjoy. Since some of the Greyjoy holy characters that you're going to want to run already have that military icon.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But, yeah. I don't know. You know, and Baratheon's already got the Ashai that adds military icons as long as something is in shadow.
Yeah, but again, like, yeah, that
adds
just
strength.
it really starts messing up, like, your gold curve. Like, when you start trying to add shadows in there. Because then, like, you're... I don't know. Because then, like, you want to keep, like, the cards in shadows. But then it's like, well, I have this card. I kind of want to play it. So, you know. And then you're like, okay, well, if I just put more shadows cards in, then I don't need to bring all of them out at once. And it's like, well, now I have too many shadows cards. And...
You know, maybe if you're just paying two for a Shadows card, it's better than paying. I mean, it's basically exactly as paying two for the location, except it has more protection.
I think the location, and that's
two if you're running a treaty of some kind.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, the card in Shadows isn't the thing that's giving your dudes military icons. That's true. Shadow Enchantress. And I feel like if you're doing Baratheon Holy Treaty to the Isles, I mean, you're getting so much more than just this location anyway. You're getting Makaro, which is awesome.
He is.
Getting Iron Mines, which that actually saves any character, right? Not just Greyjoy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's a zero cost location. Awesome for setup.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And maybe you don't want to use Treaty to the Isles. Maybe you want to use, like, the Alliance one. I forget. What does Treaty to the Isles do? Is that the one where they need, like, less power to win?
Yeah, they only need 10 power to win.
Yeah. Probably don't want to use that. Probably better with Alliance, honestly. But I don't know. I feel like there's... To me, that just, like, inspired me to, like, build that deck. Like, I saw that, and I just immediately went, like, that's awesome. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
Fair enough. Maybe we're wrong. What other cards excite you?
I think you ought to build it up and bring it to our regional.
I agree.
Well, I'll think about it. The other one was, of course, the Marjorie Tyrell by the European champion card. I just have always liked that Lannister ability to force someone to defend that they had, like, in the past. Having her, you know, just being able to, like, you know what, that dude, like, he's defending because I say so. I just really like that ability.
Yeah, she's a really cool card.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah, and of course, you know, being dual house stuff, that's awesome too.
Yeah.
You
know, do your I'm you writ small deadly surprise with a guy that you're making defend.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, why go with I'm you writ small though? I'd much rather go with the dagger to just give her deadly permanently.
Yeah, fair enough.
Mm-hmm. Well, the I mean, you're small is just so much more hilarious, though. Because then you're just like, aha.
Yeah. I guess, you know, they do have the option of defending with someone else as well.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And then you can surprise them with the deadly that way.
Yeah.
So, of course, being a Baratheon player, Melisandre's scheme...
Oh, yeah.
I think you're spot on there as well.
Yeah, that card sounded good.
Yeah, that's... And I was honestly very surprised that it was 4 gold. Because I think traditionally in the past, though, because I think there were 2 plots that did that in the past,
mm-hmm.
and they were both 3 gold.
Yeah.
The fact that that's 4 gold, that 4 gold is kind of like that. I know it's not a big difference between 3 and 4 gold, but when I see like a 3 gold plot...
I don't know. I think it is for Baratheon, because
that
gives you just the plot-based gold to drop one of those power uniques back into play if it's been discarded, you know, your Roberts or your Stannis's, your Melisandre's, that sort of thing.
Right. Yeah. Good call. But yeah, that card's just ridiculous. That and, like, the Ashai dude who moves stuff from your dead pile to your discard pile.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I've actually been getting into that guy recently.
Mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of him.
The Ashai Initiate.
Yeah.
You just get to play the dupes for free, basically.
Yeah, just straight up.
Yeah. It's
someone Valors, you save all your dudes, and then just pop the dupes back into play.
Oh, I feel like that card, Melisandre's Scheme, has to just be like the impact that it has just like mentally against the other person. Like, especially when something like that happens, you're like, well, you know, I got, like, rid of, like, you know, maybe one of the power uniques, and at least I, like, got rid of the dupe, you know? And then, like, that next turn, you're just like, JK, like, it's back again.
Never mind.
Yeah. That has to be really frustrating. So yeah, awesome card. Something else I don't think necessarily is like just game breaking awesome or anything, but just like the utility of the card, sitting the Iron Throne. I really like that card.
Yeah,
it's actually pretty dang awesome.
Yeah,
I've really been looking at it a lot lately.
Yeah, and it combos really well with you know, their themes and stuff. So I don't know. I just really like that card.
I mean, I've been wanting a way to just straight up pay for a win.
Yeah,
out of
buy the throne.
Yeah, and that's pretty much it right there. And of course, you know, there's a lot of other stuff you can do. You know, since this is a small council event, trigger Joffrey and things like that. That's
Sweet. I didn't even notice it was a small council call.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
So, this limit three times per round, is that attached to the card or the effects?
The effect as a whole, just kind of like the old, say, put to the sword, if you remember that, Josh, that said limit once per turn.
Okay.
Or round, probably, is what it said.
Yeah. So yeah, awesome card. I really like that. And I really like the endless events anyway. Those were always really cool. Something that I just thought was kind of... It's not even really that good of a card, but just like the art on the Baron and the Maiden Fae. Like, I would want to run that card just so I could look at it in my hands.
Yeah, it's alright. You know, and that's basically just a functional reprint of... of a CCG era card that I enjoyed quite a bit. So, yeah, it's a perfectly acceptable card.
Oh, yeah, it's good. Nothing else really jumped out at me too hard. I did think that the art in general was very good.
Yeah, it's been really good this
summer. Oh, it's been really kicking up for the last year or so. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Beyond the Nerfs, you had a lot of duds.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the good ones were really good.
Yeah, but, I mean, it doesn't really make up for it.
Yeah. So Song of the Sea overall for the best art in recent memory.
Maybe.
We Do Not Sew. That was something that I kind of forgotten about. Is that, like, a good card?
Not really.
Not yet, really? But I wouldn't put it past Clue to be putting something together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, I'm actually really excited about like the meta where the games end and stuff.
Cause it is. It's healthier than it's been for as long as I've been playing, at least.
Yeah. I think...
Even if it is frustrating that there's not like two or three best decks.
Well, I mean, I think I like it when it's like that, though. When like you... Everything... Like you can just pick like a house and like an idea and just make it work.
I don't have enough time to actually test things, so I need to know what the best decks are so I can play them.
Just do what I do. I was watching his stream. Well, it isn't his stream, but he's been playing with this other guy who streams during the day.
Yeah, I think that's Libertine, right?
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure it's Libertine that's been doing that.
Yeah, that's really awesome to watch while I'm at work, because I don't have anything to do, so...
Man, wish I could do that at work.
Yeah. Alright, prop and flops. Who's going to start us off?
Alright, well, I've got a prop.
Okay.
I've been reading quite a few books on my Nook lately, so I just recently downloaded and finished up the first of the Android universe novels that FFG has been putting out. That one was Free Fall. I was listening to Dodd Harris's Netrunner podcast a couple weeks back when he was interviewing some guys in Tulsa, and I believe it's Jonathan, who does their video editing, was talking about them and seemed pretty satisfied with them. So I picked up Free Fall on that recommendation and was pretty happy with it. It was a nice kind of neo-noir mystery. You know, had several characters from both board game and a couple that are mentioned in the card game, like Noise. Well, sorry, Noise was not visibly seen in the book, but he is mentioned as a suspect, which is pretty entertaining.
Yeah, he was also, he's in the original Android game, so he's not just from the card game.
Oh, okay, gotcha. So yeah, it was pretty good. I'd recommend it. I'll probably get around to checking out the others too.
How do you compare them to the old Magic novels? About the same quality?
Okay, here, Josh, would you repeat that real quick?
Yes, how would you compare them to the old Magic novels?
You know, I'd say similar to the best of the Magic novels. You know, several of those were pretty good. Like, I really dug The Thran, for instance.
That was the best one, I think. That one was amazing.
Yeah. And some of them were pretty bad. So I'd say Free Fall is in the range of some of those best ones, like the Thran.
It's pretty interesting. Is FFG actually writing them, or do they have someone else write them and they kind of release it?
I think someone else writes them. And then they release them kind of under their imprint. For instance, let's see, the novel itself, I'm opening it up here on my Nook so I can double check the author, William H. Keith. He said he began, it says here that he has a career in the RPG industry for 30 years. And so he first worked as an artist and then a writer. And it looks like he's written over 150 titles. It looks like some of it's game and game work, but also short stories, nonfiction, and over 90 novels. So he's kind of spread all over the place, but it does look like he has a connection to the gaming world already.
Mm-hmm. Right. I'm kind of surprised at the rate that George R. R. Martin is doing non-Game of Thrones related stuff. I'm kind of surprised he isn't writing one of these novels.
Yeah, you know, granted, I would read the hell out of a George R. R. Martin Android novel.
Yeah, you know what, I would too, actually.
That would be great.
Yeah. FFG, get on that.
I have a prop.
Okay.
I got a early / late, depending on how you're going to look at it, wedding present from my uncle.
Okay.
It is a Warring Pro professional double waffle maker.
All right.
And it has changed my life.
Yeah.
I'm making so many waffles now, you have no idea.
And I, you know, I've heard from other folks, you just kind of pick one food and just stick with that food.
For 2 or 3 months at a time, yeah.
Okay, so right now you're in waffle mode.
Well, I'm in waffle mode.
Are you making, like, exotic waffles, or are these just plain Jane, you know, average waffles?
It's a day old, so right now it's just plain Jane average waffles, but I'm gonna get a little crazy, I'm feeling.
Oh, okay. So, I'll talk to you again here after a while. At the end of the 2 to 3 month period.
Yeah. See how crazy I got. Yeah, just the instruction manual gives recipes for pumpkin nut Belgian waffles.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Gingerbread Belgian waffles. Yeah, I'm gonna do some cool stuff.
Sounds pretty interesting.
Josh, you got anything?
I don't really. I haven't really been looking at anything. I really do. I've just been reading and working lately.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, actually, no. I take that back. Netflix recently got a bunch of the old Cartoon Network stuff, Adventure Time, and yeah.
Well, that's kind of new stuff, so. But I did get all the old stuff like Dexter's Lab and Courage the Cowardly Dog, right, and Power Girls and such.
Yeah, yeah.
Johnny Bravo.
Oh, Johnny Bravo's on there?
Mm-hmm.
Hot dog. But yeah, that's my prep.
It's a good one.
Ah, thanks.
William?
You know, I've also got another prop here. Actually, you know, maybe all of mine are going to be Nook related, because I also just noticed a brand new one, but my other prop is going to be to the next novel I started here. Actually, I read another one in between, but it's not really prop worthy. This one, though, is my brand new one, The Dragon's Path by Daniel Abraham. Now, if I remember right, back when we interviewed George R. R. Martin, wasn't Abraham one of the authors that Martin recommended?
I can't remember, honestly.
I'm pretty sure, but I haven't listened to that episode in a very long time. Listeners, go check it out and find out for me. It's very important for me to know this. But so far, it's been really cool. His writing style, I would say, is maybe kind of a happy middle between, like, Martin and, like, Sanderson. Mm-hmm. So it's in a realm that I already kind of like, though I keep waiting for, you know, like the other shoe to drop, so to speak. Like those guys, when I've been reading their stuff lately, there's always like a new catastrophe on the verge of happening, and I expect something terrible to happen to the characters. Though obviously Sanderson's are never quite as bad as Martin's.
Yeah.
But at least he still gives you that feeling. But anyway, Abraham hasn't had any of that happen yet, but I've still been enjoying it. I'm about 100 pages in out of 950 or so. And one of the main characters is actually a banker. So double props to her. That makes it awfully entertaining to me.
Bankers are just the worst of people.
Yeah. For anyone that doesn't know, I am a banker. And I am.
And I loathe bankers.
Tell that to Rings.
I will. Bankers are the absolute worst of people. If bankers didn't exist, my job would be 30% better.
If bankers didn't exist, would you have a job?
Debatable.
Okay. just thought I'd double check.
How does it compare to, like, Steven Erickson or Robin Hobb?
You know, I actually have not read any Hobb or Erickson. Though Greg has been trying to really talk me into reading some of Robin Hobb's stuff. So sometime soon I need to get around to that.
Yeah, I think that Robin Hobb is probably she's tied for favorite author with Martin. It's really good.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely need to check that out then.
Yeah. And I think you'd really like Steven Erickson too. Because it's a lot of the... Like, he writes in, like, this big, grand, like, you know, hundreds of characters type thing like Martin does. But it's always... it's a lot more often third person rather than first person like Martin does. Occasionally he'll touch on first person, but it's mostly third person, which I think kind of makes better. Because that Melisandre chapter, I would much rather have not read that. I don't know, I feel like I really liked Melisandre for, you know, 10 years. I thought she was awesome. And then it's like finding out that, like, that cool uncle that you knew as a kid is really just, like, an alcoholic and, like, a deadbeat.
Wow.
Yeah. It was really
sobering,
disenfranchising. Yeah, exactly. It's like, man, she really has no idea what's going on. Yeah, she has no idea what's going on at all.
But at least she is actually not evil.
Well, I mean, did Hitler think
she doesn't believe she's evil? She's worthless and may endanger the universe by being so worthless.
Ah, damn. You're right on both counts.
I mean, true, like, people, like, real people, no one ever thinks they're evil, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's only really, like, in comic books do you get people who, like, know they're evil and, like, are pumped about it.
All right. Touché. Though maybe we're getting into a deeper philosophical discussion than Props and Slops really needs on an episode that's already kind of long.
Yeah,
maybe that's exactly what Slop and Props does need.
You know, maybe so. We'll have to let the listeners give us some feedback on that.
Fair enough. I want 10% of the proceeds.
Okay.
It's all yours.
Every time we actually make money on this, you can have 10% of those proceeds. Hint,
you know, that's gonna
we're not making any.
Come back. That's going to come back to bite you in the ass.
One day you actually might.
Possibly.
We'll find a way to monetize the podcast.
I'm going to get 10%.
Yeah, post-taxes, though. Post-taxes.
You know what? That's fair enough. Just 10% of the actual profits.
Ah, okay.
Not in, like, the revenue, just the profits.
Okay. Good luck.
I want that
in writing. I have one more prop, and then I'm out for the day. It's to another FFG game I picked up a couple weeks ago. I can't remember exactly when. Elder Sign.
Is that the physical one, or did you pick it up, like, on your phone or something?
The physical
one. Okay.
But I love Arkham Horror, but I have a hard time finding people to play with me because it takes forever to get set up, and the game itself is actually kind of complicated. But I picked up Elder Sign because that's just Arkham Horror, but simplified, and that's exactly what it is. To the point, like, the characters are the exact same. There's just a lot of stuff that's just the exact same, but simplified.
Nice.
It's pretty cool. I like it. I'm out. That's all I got.
Well, I've got a couple more, actually. I just picked up my Nook so I could double-check the author and title and make sure I got it right for that book. And it popped up and also pointed out that my Nook software had just been updated to version, I think, 2.1, it said. And it finally brought me access to the full Google Play Store, Google Chrome, and various Google apps on here, which is pretty awesome because it had been filtered previously through the Nook store. So I'm excited to have full access now without the little workaround that I had to do to get it running. So anyway.
That's actually really surprising that didn't come like that. I'm surprised that they would try and limit what you could access.
You know, I'm not terribly surprised. So did, you know, Amazon with the Kindle and all. But I'm glad that Barnes & Noble has wised up and decided, you know, we'll probably just get more people interested in these honestly really awesome tablets as far as their features go for the price if we just give them full access. I think that's right. Going to be way more appealing to folks. So, yeah.
Agreed.
That's cool. And then my other one I'm going to slip in here is another computer-related one. I'm going to give a prop actually to Hedgeman, the guy that took over running the Octagon plugin stuff for Thrones. Octagon's been going through a bunch of changes lately, so I'm sure he's had a huge hassle updating and re-updating and tweaking things through the different systems. Though I have to admit, Octagon is finally getting to a point where I'm not just terribly annoyed to try and use the software. So props to him for that hard work, and I know a lot of people are using that plugin and running with it. So I just hope the Octagon dev team is careful here and doesn't wind up doing anything that gets them, I don't know, some cease and desists or anything like that.
In
like,
trouble.
Yeah, like folks have been a little worried because they're trying to monetize stuff. So we'll see what happens there, but I wanted to recognize Hedgeman on the show.
Fair enough.
Good guy, Hedgeman.
I'm still not willing to go anywhere near Octagon.
Well, good for you, I guess.
I, however, will be installing that when we get done here. Well, actually, I'm installing it now, but...
Good job.
Well, you've listened to another fine episode of Champs One Chump and Staten. Tune in next week. Same time, same place. We may or may not have Staten.
Well.
Change yourself.